Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio I've got Naranoa Renata. Good morning.
Ai, atamari e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa.
You've got, we're testing her headphones. Are you getting anything?
Yes.
You got something
there? Ka pai.
Okay, not too loud?
No,
We should have done this before we got on the air. This is a bit of a habit of mine. Why be organised when you can do it live? So, yes, we have a segment we call Kai Rongoa.
Kai Rongoa is really claims to speak to the holistic field of how medicine, rongoa Māori is part of that story. Rongoa is, you know, on different aspects of a community life, the political, social, environmental.
Right. Okay.
I can take that lead, on that.
So, okay, so that maybe then it does, because I always felt like we end up talking about many other things as well. And that was going to lead into the fact that you want to talk about the coronation today.
Yes, I do. And I really want to project into our community that while it didn't happen on the streets of Whaingaroa, we actually participated by paying a lot of our taxes. Millions of dollars was contributed towards the, if you like, the coronation's success, and so did 16 other countries who are part of the Commonwealth. So there's... The word Commonwealth actually specifically belongs to that you are under the sovereign power of the King and Queen who are currently experience their coronation in England.
Okay. Does our government send money, or is it just spent in terms of sending people from Aotearoa?
We send money regularly. We contribute to the fact that the Crown exists. And that's not a history that is taught in schools, and I think it should be a very much a highlight of what it means to belong to the Commonwealth in terms of our sovereign power that we proclaim as a government. We're not sovereign to ourselves. We actually belong to an allegiance to the English Crown.
So is that... So what was the deal in the treaty with sovereignty?
Oh, there was no... The deal hasn't even been honoured. So
yes, we do know that.
The deal... Well, the deal didn't go through... let's jump into that because that's about actually how te reo Māori and the English of the day, which is way before the treaty was even signed... What I'm interested in is how did European who... Because we were governed from Paramata at that time, and so 1809, 1805, when the colony
in
was...
Australia.
Yes, it was the government house was actually positioned there for all the right reasons, because they were establishing... They had established a convict colony in the Rocks, which is downtown Sydney.
I love the way you say for all the right reasons.
Well, they were looking for a place where they could throw their convicts that were English, of English descent, and whoever else was being naughty in England. And so, to be fair, Poihakina, which is Sydney, was established as a convict colony.
Poihakina?
Poihakina is the Māori name for Sydney.
Oh, okay. Confusing for those who've just heard it associated with that rather than the local marae.
Yeah. And so Sydney was also the Koori people. So if we look at the mana whenua, there was definitely a huge presence of the those who were indigenous, and they had been definitely pushed to the side and framed and also seen and written about extensively in the colony, because one of the features of the colonial government or the colonial powers was they could write stories, and they loved to write about other people who were not of English descent, who were in their
orbit.
They always had a view, and they always wrote about it, and those views today are not taken on board, but there's certainly a lot of research is done, and we refer to them. I mean, I'm studying about one of our tupuna Te Pahi, who was a was a paramount chief in the Bay of Islands, and one of the comments that was made in terms of the gazetted in Sydney, that he was almost civilized. And that's not, that's 1805.
Fantastic. Yeah. So that has basically formed the historical record, because and it needs to be interpreted through that, through the lens that we know the attitudes of the people writing it, I guess.
And also, you know, when we think of te reo, so they had translators. So how did these translators become educated in te reo and English? So Te Pahi was fluent in both English and Māori when he travelled to Sydney, and he travelled more than once on a six-week journey by sea.
Yeah.
Our paramount chief from the far north. So I'm very interested in what did the translators actually say when he spoke to Governor Gidley King at the time. You know.
So he spoke Māori only?
No,
he spoke English. He spoke both. Okay.
Yeah.
So he was translating for himself.
And well, I'm assuming that Governor Gidley King, and I've read about it, had a translator for himself, so he could understand what Te Pahi was, you know, these, we've got to remember that these translations were the early days of where the colony was learning Māori, both English and Māori were learning each other's language.
Yeah.
But by that time, Ngāpuhi had also written the Bible in Māori.
Mm.
The Bible is actually available, Te Paipera Tapu, in a northern dialect. Since that time, that's quite incredible. That says a lot about our people, their ability to adapt and become bilingual in a very short space of time, and to translate a significant document that was in the Queen's English that had been translated from Hebrew.
Yeah.
And Aramaic into English. You know what I mean? There's translations going on.
Translations of translations. But I did read, I'm trying to think of an interview that I did a while ago with, I can't remember his name, which is really embarrassing, but this happens to me a lot, about what happened when the Bible was translated into Māori, because prior to that, the missionaries were saying, well, you have to become civilized like us to be a Christian. And then the Bible was translated, and then they discovered that that actually didn't say that anywhere in the Bible.
Yeah, no, the colony didn't say that. Samuel Marsden did, and he was his specific job in the colony was to Christianize. He was a missionary of significance. Mm. Actually, in Poihakana, he was not highly regarded. His profile in terms of the colony was he was very, very unkind. There are many other words I could use towards the mana whenua, the Kauri people, and the convicts. And he was given permission, if you like, through Māori, our Māori chiefs, and in particular from the far north, to actually come into Aotearoa. His specific goal was to, as a missionary, and to create mission stations, which he did, in the far north first, and to enable Christianity to flourish because of the perception of how they saw Māori were living at the time.
So I just mentioned it was Jay Ruka, who used to live in Whangaroa, and wrote the book Who We Come Home that I was referring to.
Yes, I've read that book, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so tying this all back into the coronation.
I think it's really important that we have conversations around loyalty and those who are anti-loyalists, and don't downplay the fact that from the time of signing the treaty to now... that there is still a lot of unrest around being governed, having a king and queen who are just like so far away, it's ridiculous, who we somehow have been silenced enough to go, oh yeah, that was amazing. That was amazing. Oh my God, the carriage is made of gold. You know, it's dripping with gold.
I was on YouTube and I saw a little live button, and I clicked on it to have a look. And they were mid ceremony, and he was being given some fancy bejeweled thing in it, but it was very boring. So I went away again. That's all I saw.
Mm.
So I don't know. Not everyone was impressed by it.
No, but they did. They certainly chose who. Very carefully who would be at the coronation, and the Māori king was there and some of his people.
Yeah
he was at the coronation in
Westminster Abbey.
So those to me are all very political choices of who's on now.
Yeah, that's true, actually. It is crafted very carefully.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Crafting and drafting and crafting is one of the formulas that the colony uses to maintain power. But I did appreciate the fact that Charles's youngest, his son?
William. Harry.
Harry arrived, did his duty, and went home. And that was a statement. That was a big statement in itself.
He's already made several statements, so that one wasn't a big surprise. But yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it was a great statement. I think it was very brave. And I think from that, there are many people who will make their own storylines, but I'm pretty sure it's very clear where he stands.
Yeah, well, he said he doesn't want to be an official royal anymore, and he wants to stand on his own.
Yes, yeah. And of course his family didn't travel with him to the coronation.
I didn't bring his wife or children.
No, they remained in Canada?
I think so. We're thinking Canada.
We're thinking Canada.
Nowhere near England, though. That's the main point. Nowhere near England. Yeah, yeah. So would you prefer to have... So the king,
the
royal family, yeah,
king,
you
know, and queen.
Because we didn't say queen and king before, the queen and the other guy. But it performs a political function in terms of the structure of New Zealand. The head of state has a role to play. So New Zealand would need to, if we went the Republican way, we would need something else to fill that role in this nation. There need to be either a sovereign or a president or something like that. Are you aware of any? What have you got thoughts about that at all?
Oh, there's been so much work done on the role models of what's possible in terms of becoming a sovereign nation and holding sovereignty, which is tino rangatiratanga, and that is embedded in the treaty document, in the Māori version, of course, which means that we are our own sovereign power. I think we're so totally capable. It's not funny. We're extremely well versed in the law systems that we currently have. We can navigate many things. And why wouldn't we be capable of running our own country? I mean,
well, we are really. Of course, we could do this.
You know, why wouldn't we over a period of time and make mistakes?
Well, it's not like we haven't made mistakes before, is it?
No, not at all. So, like, you know, like this whole thing of like, well, we have something that's better or worse, or we haven't had the opportunity to do that because we're under a colony. We're a colonized country. And, yeah, I don't think people fully appreciate that actually money goes out to the king since the colony was established.
Is it as much as the banks are sending out of the country at the moment? We just saw ANZ made $1 billion in the last 12 months and sent all that money out of the country.
We too. Because
ANZ is owned by an Australian bank. All our banks are owned by Australian banks. So their profit, which is in billions of dollars each year, but between the four of them, I think it's four, all goes to Australia. So, like I understand what you're saying about the king, but it's a bit more. The king doesn't hold any significant. It's very symbolic what's happening, and is an important part of the power structure. But it's not, the king is not powerful like kings of the bygone era, 200 or 300 years ago. And whereas the banks are just one thing I look at, and I see a lot of a lot of power there.
Yes, yes, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that's another whole story. I mean, the World Bank is pretty corrupt, so yeah, that's just another whole story about how money is the main form of exchange.
Yeah.
And that in itself has created many, many storylines.
Mm.
That have, destroyed people's lives as well. You know, people can't cope with a debt that they've incurred over in recent times. You know, that's a big story, that one about, you know, taking your own life because you can't, because you've got this debt that you've incurred through actually trying to get on with life and project to make money for your family and your company, and
yeah,
you know, and it hasn't worked.
Not just in this land either.
Yeah.
Plenty of other places this happens. So let me think. Just back to the whole Republican, becoming a republic sort of a thing. I know the PM was asked about it when he was over there. Admittedly, he probably didn't want to boast about his Republican credentials while he's there for the coronation. He probably thought that felt a bit rude. He did say that he thinks New Zealand will eventually go its own way, but there doesn't seem to be a mood for that at the moment. Is that, how do you feel? You sound like you have a mood for that right now.
Oh, I think in terms of how Māori speak and talk to each other in different places and times, definitely it's a conversation that's been had for many years in some shape or form. And that we're working on, there is, how do you say, research being done to look at the way that the laws of our land, you know, do not serve. Who do they serve? I'm currently reading my daughter-in-law's, one of her papers. She's doing her master's. She's a lawyer, huia. And it's looking at Indigenous law and the current laws that we have from the Magna Carta,
yeah,
and the relationship of those. So there's a lot of very important work that continues to be done as we chip away at this thing we think is not there. It's right there. It's absolutely right there, dominating our lives every day. But we do choose, I think we choose to not speak, and we've also been trained not to speak up too much unless there's a worldwide crisis.
Yeah.
Or of some kind.
I've only heard this in mainstream news, so I don't know how to vouch for its accuracy, but I hear people saying that because the treaty is an agreement between the Crown and Māori people, that would that undermine the treaty, not having a relationship with the Crown anymore? Your thoughts on that?
The treaty has gone a long way to empowering Indigenous people around the world, our treaty.
Yeah.
Because of the way that Māori also continue to bring it to the attention of, you know, the United Nations as a forum. In terms of our rights and responsibilities, because it is an unusual treaty that we hold in Aotearoa, New Zealand. How we will protect those who come under the treaty is really a discussion that we have every day in different ways, because people are unprotected under the treaty, the current so-called treaty agreement.
So who is unprotected?
So we have whole groups in society who do not receive the benefits of being under the treaty, you know, like there are favoured communities.
So specifically, who do you mean? Like, are you talking about people who have come from other cultures who are neither Pākehā nor Māori?
No, I think it's fair to say that Māori have never been. We don't share a partnership. One way of looking at it is like a marriage, and yeah. that if it's with the Crown and Māori, there's absolutely no partnership there. Never has been. So what Māori have asked for or agreed was the agreement. I mean, we own. You need to, you know, watch a film like Whina and you realise, like, we've known about this injustice and this imbalance through the loss of millions of acres of land.
Yeah.
Through
yeah.
confiscation. That in itself is enough to, like, know that the inequity will continue because we don't have the lands that we should have that actually belong to us, you know, to Māori.
Yeah.
Under our lawfully, they're not considered ours legally. So,
yeah,
whenua, that's an interesting word in itself. Whenua, you know, or mana whenua, who has mana of the land? We might claim those words as Māori as being mana whenua, which is indigenous to the land, because we were the first, you know, first people here, and then. And in actual fact, we don't, it started with building fences, didn't it, really? Turning it into blocks of land that had names, so you had separate titles.
Titles, yeah.
Yeah,
bits
titles.
Bits of paper relating to them.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at those bits of land, you can see they're very odd shapes, some of them. You think, how do they get to...
Well, they were probably... That's a door swinging around in here. They were probably drawn by people in England. Like the street map of Auckland was drawn by people in England, and they didn't realise they were creating mudslides down into Queen Street.
So no, well, that's
just one example. And so I imagine the weird shapes you're looking at often, part of the reason for that is just because it was drawn by someone in a whole different part of the world who'd never seen the land.
That's a really good point, and that's how... why the wars continue between India and Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, yes.
yeah. Because of that very fact, you know. Do you think
consciously drawn to leave a state of conflict so that they'd be easier to manage?
Well, the fact is there is a state of conflict ever since they were drawn.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that's the facts, that it's never, ever going to settle. Because it wasn't drawn by Indigenous people. Mm. It was drawn by the colony on their way out.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, is it, yeah. There's lots to talk about there, but...
And whenua is a really important word that we use, you know, to denote a landscape or the ground on which we walk and the whenua of Aotearoa. But it's also a kupu that we use for placenta.
Yeah.
Which is a really beautiful spiritual understanding and anatomical understanding that the nourishment, you know, I'm going to flip side this because whenua has this beautiful meaning as well related to the placenta. It is placenta, which is what nourishes and feeds an unborn child. And so we have ceremony around what we call whenua ki te whenua, which is practiced in my whānau. I hold that responsibility, which is to take the whenua of my grandchildren or my own children. In my case, my mother was responsible for taking that whenua and burying them on ancestral land or in places that were safe where they would not be built on or disturbed. And it's a ceremonial part of acknowledging that the original nourisher and nurturer of us is our earth mother, Papa Tuanuku.
Mm.
So that's a really... a practice that we're revitalising.
I often talk to you about, until you've become pretty bilingual, that there are concepts in other languages that can't be understood in your own language. But that I can, it's quite easy to see with that when you're using whenua for the placenta and for the what we call the land in English, that you're, how much that changes your view of the world, that the land is not just a thing that you bang a stake into or put the piles into or plant a tree into. It's much more than that.
Much more.
Yeah, and you would care for it in a way that you don't when you're working just from the English definition, which is more utilitarian, I guess.
Yes.
And it just would, and you would automatically, you wouldn't have to think, oh, I better take care of the land. It just is there as what you do. I think that's...
I think when the fences were introduced by the colony, I think that really visually and was really changed a lot about, like, what's going on here? We don't get this. Because then you have gates, which are the way that you access the land, the property next door. So it was... It's hard to imagine how weird that was, but it must have been so strange.
It must have been
strange.
Weird. Māori people must have been like, what are they doing?
Oh,
all this effort.
Yeah.
And then eventually it became apparent what it meant, I guess.
And you see it, like, even when you look out on the landscape, like I was out at Ruapuke recently and I looked to one side, you know, I'm looking at the moana, and then the left-hand side I'm looking over at these fences, and they're going in really odd directions. They're not straight. They're over, like, extremely difficult landscape. And I'm going, what is that? And why would you do that?
Because someone drew it on a piece of paper.
Just seems, you know, it just appears to be like, well, it's claiming and letting you know that I own that. And you need to know that. That's how it feels.
And an underlying value or belief in there is that what was drawn on the piece of paper is the most important thing. And if you have to struggle to build a fence down a crazy slope, then you'll do it because the piece of paper says that's where it should be. And there's a real... And I don't think we understand growing up in this paper world how much of a difference that makes.
The paper...
The importance of the piece of paper that shows where the lines go. Like, the piece of paper defines reality. A reality has to fit the piece of paper.
Those pieces of paper, which, you know, I've seen many across in my time in terms of what they call whenua Māori being blocked out into shapes and, you know, called 5C or 1A1. Mm. And you think, okay, when they weren't there, which wasn't that long ago, it's a very different visual experience, but you were taught where the boundaries, not the boundaries, but where the places were that were, you know, important to know about regarding that landscape. But once you start putting up fences, it's interesting how it's raised many, many difficult emotions within us to establish, oh, so that's, whose land is that on over there?
Mm.
Oh, that's, you know, Uncle Toss. Well, okay, so what's, you know, access ways into blocks of land then became extremely, and still are, bones of contention.
Even recently, in the recent Chronicle, there were letters about an issue ongoing in Whangaroa about exactly that access.
Yeah, access issue. And water are the two things that come up all the time. So access ways, you know, like... It might only be 100 feet to get to a block of land, but there's no access. That journey can go through your whole lifetime and never be resolved because of the conversations that perhaps are had during that time of trying to work out what the best access way is. You know, you don't... Yeah, you have these, like... Yeah.
Where to put the lines.
Where to put the
lines. Yeah.
And whether you can take your electric bike or a car or a four-wheel drive or a trailer or...
Yeah, yeah.
Access. So access is also another, is what do we have access to in the colony? We are colonised. We're a colonised country, you know. It's a fact. In terms of, you know, te reo, so I currently offer to our community a small offering to enhance our bilingual, bicultural journey going forward. So it's really to awhina our people, and that's, you know, of all races who choose to participate in learning te reo, you know, at the Old School Art Centre.
Yep.
And I know the timing's not everyone's available at that time, but it's, important that we continue to show some solidarity, that we actually want our community to flourish under our dual cultural heritage.
So, folks, we are talking to Ngarunora Renata, and you do from time to time do conversational, or not, sorry, Māori language classes, te reo classes, which is what you're talking about right now. So
yes,
you're starting a new one soon?
Oh, no, I already have established one at the Old School Dance Centre on Wednesday mornings from 10 till 12.
And that's going for a few weeks now, is it?
Yes, it'll go for the rest of this term. And we'll, you know, we'll vibe in, we'll see how we...
Okay, so we've got like another 8 or 9 weeks.
Yes, eight weeks.
So is it too late to join?
No, you can come as you are, according to your availability.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's no course. It's not a course, you know, you have to come from the beginning because, that's how I choose to navigate the journey of te reo at this point, and I'm comfortable in that space as well.
How is it good for beginners or people who've already learnt a bit? Or
it's good for everybody.
Okay.
Everybody who wishes to learn kupu Māori, or the way of learning is not just through spoken word, it's through waiata. There's different ways that it's approached through that 2-hour period.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not a chalk and talk. Although there is a chalkboard there and I do write on it.
From time to time. Okay, so that's Wednesday mornings, 10 to 12, 8 weeks. And so do you pick like a topic, or there's got to be a better word than topic, but
it's through the arts.
It's through the arts, okay.
Yes, so I my background being in the arts, I can bring in those creative aspects as a... That's how I prefer to engage with the reo.
Okay. So you are talking about a particular topic area for each session.
Oh, yes.
So everything kind of ties in together.
Yes.
Because that's one of the hardest things about learning a language. If you do it in a systematic way, you're going, okay, today we're going to learn a whole lot of verbs. And it's hard to stick it in your head because it's dislocated information.
It's good to have a kaupapa.
Yeah,
where,
yes.
You know, a kaupapa. So, yes, we do that. I wanted to, you know, perhaps in closing here, is to talk about, if that's okay, about Anzac Day, and I made the kaupapa for me on Anzac Day.
Because you were part of the ceremony.
I became part of the ceremony, yes.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole missing chunk, really. I feel.
So for those who weren't there, can we describe what you were doing?
Well, what I had done was I had approached our kaumātua, and to be honest, it was in the 11th hour, by circumstances on my behalf, where I spoke very briefly to Matua Sean about koromiko and its significance in the world wars. Koromiko is a hebe, and the native koromiko has a white flower. There's many hebes, hundreds of them, but this particular one is the native hebe, was sent from Aotearoa during the World Wars to the Māori Battalion, to the Middle East, for the soldiers to use for dysentery and diarrhea, and it worked.
Ah.
So it was packaged and literally sent like that, you know, packaged or dried, packaged and sent to the Middle East. And I feel that has a story for us to savour, and should be sitting alongside the poppy, because it's our story. You know, it's part of our story. The poppy, yes, the poppy didn't grow here, and the poppy has an absolute significance, but the Kurumiko also speaks of the medicine that it took to the Middle East, and also non-Māori had taken the Kurumiko, this hebe, and it was regarded, it was, you know, the reports were, the written reports, that it was highly successful.
It wasn't exactly healthy living conditions on the front line.
Oh, my gosh, can you? I have no. I mean, we're talking about boys who were in the war. They weren't grown men.
No.
Our boys, teenagers, you know, they was, yeah, were allowed to go there. That's not a good story. When we think back on their age and how they got there, they were young. They were so young.
I'm very thankful I was born to a generation where that didn't happen.
It's just, yeah. And their loyalty and their desire to be, their loyalty to Aotearoa New Zealand was extraordinary. But, yeah, we lost them, didn't we? We lost them and they died and were buried on foreign soil. So they continue to remain there. But this Kurumiko was one of those stories. I think if we became familiar with it, we might even use it, the Kurumiko, you know, as a symbol of our desire to provide medicine, rongoa.
Well, it's something to grab hold of that's to do with us and not about the empire. You know, everything about, especially First World War, was really just about the empire. We were part of the empire, and so we sent boys, you know, to their death. And
it's not something to be celebrated.
No, and I
have a problem with that whole. I feel that what about the women, the nurses? Can somebody, you know, raise those stories and bring them forward? It's not about those who died. It's about those who served as well. And there were plenty of women who you know, gave their lives to these wars, but you never hear their names spoken and in speeches. Why not? Why aren't we telling those stories?
I have many thoughts because I struggle personally. I struggle with. I'm not sure what direction the event, the Anzac Day event, is coming from. Whether it's coming because there's trappings of empire and establishment stuff going on, that, and I'm not sure if that's what's driving it. Or, the thing about sending our boys away and they sacrifice the ultimate sacrifice, and we should remember them for that. Yes, I understand that. That makes perfect sense. But the trappings of empire and the establishment trappings, I'm uncomfortable with. And I never quite know which one is winning out on Anzac Day. I don't know.
Well, it's a very masculine event. You know, it's a very masculine event.
Yeah.
And it really holds that side of our society up in a certain light, you know, that whole military aspect. But there was a whole nother part of that storyline that deserves to be balanced out.
Have we even got those stories?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got those stories. We prefer to tell about bravery and loss of life rather than the nurturing, nourishing aspect of, I know about Florence Nightingale. How do I know about her?
True, yes.
How do I know about her? You know, I'm sure there were Māori nurses that did amazing things during those times, and they were devastated and traumatised as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well and truly into you know, the day they died, but we do not hear those stories being told or shared as stories of bravery.
Yeah, and that's what worries me, that we're too much looking at the glorification. And I think a lot of people might feel offended at me saying that about Anzac Day. But all I'm saying is I'm not sure, I'm actually not sure what's coming through. I know I'm uncomfortable with any kind of glorification.
I think what happens with glorification, what I see happening is that you continually look at the weapons of war. You know, the glorification means that, you died. You died. You know, we have one.
We got one. You can see one right now, a weapon of war.
Yeah.
Not in use anymore.
And so those were built.
It's across the road, folks, but in case you're wondering, there is a tank. Not a tank, a gun. What do you call that kind of gun? It's on wheels. I don't even know. Artillery?
Yes. And so it's about, oh, wow, that's amazing. I wonder how they made that. Well, it killed lives. It killed innocent lives. You know, is that glorification? Yep, that's glorification if we continue to put those things in front of us of weapons of war.
Maybe a statue of a nurse attending to a wounded soldier
would be much more appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's time, you know, that we downloaded those stories and shared those the lives that were nurtured and nourished during that time.
Yeah, and we should maybe telling the stories of the war that happened on this land. The wars that happened on this land.
Oh, that's happening. I think.
Certainly is. And a few years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, my oldest daughter, when she was one of her classmates, was a head girl at Raglan Area School, and she was a Māori girl, and she talked about the Māori soldiers' contribution at that time, even though they'd just come from fighting with the English here in Aotearoa, then they were fighting against the English here in Aotearoa, then fighting with the English over there. And she tried to tie that together, which I thought was a really brave thing for a 17-year-old to do here in the middle of town with the soldiers and the accoutrements of the establishment, the empire all around her, you know. I was super impressed.
You know, maybe it's time for us to sing more waiata in Māori as well, as an acknowledgement of the reo that was present during that time and is present now. You know, those things and the sounds that we hear. I'd love to see taonga pūoro lead ceremony through Anzac, which are amazing trumpets called a pūkaia.
Yeah.
To announce, you know, ceremonially those the wairua side of Te Ao Māori being present within our Anzac ceremonies, because the first sound we hear is what's that band that we hear here?
Oh, the bagpipes.
Yeah.
The marching band. Yeah. Yeah. Although that's Scottish and that's another colonised. They were the first people to be colonised by the English.
Are we all confused, are we?
There's so much to unpack there as well, but we really haven't got time to get into that.
I'd just like people to really remember the koromiko.
Yes.
And to you know, ask me when they see me on the streets of Raglan and about it and which one and what does it look like and, you know, to share that story with our tamariki going forward as part of our story of healing and contribution of rongoā Māori at a time and an extreme time of war. And destruction.
Yeah, imagine if that story was taught in the schools to the young ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, how significant that would be. Yeah. All right, well, thank you for coming in, Naranoa. And we'll just remind people that her ongoing English classes, Wednesday 10 to 12.
To the all classes.
Did I say English? Yes, you're going to teach English. That's exactly what's going to happen.
I'm good at it.
You're good at it. Sorry, yes. Te Reo classes, Wednesday 10 to 12. And so it'll be happening tomorrow.
Yes.
Or if you're listening just before 8 o'clock on Wednesday, it'll be happening today. So for the next 8 weeks.
Aye, kia ora.